Part 2 Chapter 15 Home Then, July Life sped up after I stepped off the airplane from Denver. Dan was at the airport to meet me, which was a surprise, something he'd never done before, and I knew in an instant what it meant. Aunt Penny was dead. He folded me into his arms and we cried there in the airport baggage claim while people watched us, wondering what our tragedy was. We didn't look like a joyful reunion, and we weren't. "Why didn't you tell me?" I asked when we were in the car he'd borrowed from a friend, snarled in traffic.
"You were doing your thing. I didn't want to ruin it. How was it, by the way?"
"It was good." That felt like an understatement, but it was hard to sum it up in a few words. Not life-changing, but life-something. When we'd gotten our phones back at the airport from Gary, we'd exchanged contact information, and Connie had created a group text thread in one of the encrypted apps that she'd developed. "Women Killing It," she'd called it, and I'd laughed at her enthusiasm. Our first meetup was scheduled for a week later, and I had a check-in with Michelle on the books, too.
"So much excitement,"
Dan said, his hands confident on the wheel. He looked paler than when I'd left him, his tan faded after spending 4 days at the hospital. Penny had died the day before, slipping away peacefully with only Dan in the room. There had been no deathbed wishes or regrets. She'd simply gone to sleep and never woken up. "I'll tell you about it later," I said. "Right now, I just want to be sad." He reached over and squeezed my hand.
"Me too."
I leaned my head against the window and looked out, watching the world crawl by. It was hot and muggy, a haze settling over the city. It was a blanket that I could feel being pulled over me, a weight I wanted to kick off. "When's the funeral?"
"On Friday."
"Family coming in for it? Or are they still here?"
"Mom and Catherine went home on Friday. They'll be back Thursday."
"Fantastic." Dan squeezed my hand again.
"It'll be okay. You know they never stay long."
"Sure," I said. But I didn't believe it. Somehow I knew I'd regret going to Penny's funeral before I stepped into the black dress that I pulled from the back of my closet. The weather seemed to agree with me. An unrelenting rain was forecast for the entire day, and the sky was so dark I'd slept until my alarm shattered me awake, something that almost never happened. I hated New York when it rained. In small-town Connecticut, where I'd grown up, the summer rain seemed like a cleanser, nature's street cleaner. When it was over, the air was fresh and the trees felt greener. In Manhattan, rain heightened the smells and grime you learned to ignore most of the time, creating a thick sludge in the gutters and clouds of humidity that clung to you. But it wasn't the weather's fault that I felt down and tired. Other than Dan, Penny felt like the only family I had. My parents were only children, and I'd grown up without cousins or grandparents, just our tight family unit. I'd never warmed to Dan's family, and the crush of work meant I hadn't kept in touch with most of the friends I'd made in law school other than through Facebook. Even my best work friend, Felicia, often felt like a friendship of convenience. It was probably my fault, but the reality was that I was lonely, something I hadn't thought much about until I started receiving daily texts from my Panthera pride. "Good luck today," Athena had texted earlier. The others had quickly added their heart emojis and thumbs-up signs. It felt good to have them in my corner. I texted back my own series of hearts and tried not to dwell on what I had to face today. His family. Saying goodbye to Penny. The reading of the will. Dan's family on his mother's side, old money wasps who'd lost most of their wealth during various economic downturns and most spectacularly when Dan was in college, knew how to follow the protocol and heighten the drama in all circumstances. His mother, for example, was probably happy about the weather. It meant Louise could limit her time by the graveside and stay in her fortress of solitude under a large umbrella held by the driver hired for the occasion. I knew better than to suggest this to Dan, but he also knew better than to challenge my moods when his family was in town. Dan's dad, a jovial, nice guy with a ready smile and corny jokes, had died 5 years ago after a brief illness. I'd always wondered why Louise hadn't moved back to New York then. She'd been born here and had lived in the city until she'd gone to Ohio after she'd married. It was something she talked about constantly, making her twice yearly pilgrimages to reconnect with her roots. But Louise and Dan's sister, Catherine, had the business to run, apparently, and so she simply couldn't. I'd breathed a sigh of relief, but the excuse was ridiculous. The part of the family pharmaceutical business that was left was run by competent people who answered to the bank, although they gave Catherine a position because clients liked thinking they were dealing with a family company rather than a cold group of bean counters. In my opinion, the most likely reason that they were staying put was that Louise ran the country club and Catherine had no connection to New York. She went to Berkeley for college and Wharton for her MBA. Neither of them liked being a small fish in a big pond, let alone a fish out of water. Whatever the reason, I was happy to see as little of them as possible. Despite the alarm, we were almost late. Our coffee maker chose that day to give up the ghost, and Dan insisted on buying coffee from a coffee shop because he couldn't face the day uncaffeinated. The only good thing that had happened so far was that my dress fit less snugly than I thought it would. I'd kept my promise and had hit the gym in the building every morning since I'd been home, getting in 45 minutes on the treadmill. It sucked, and I walked a lot, but the times when I was running were starting to last longer. I'd coupled that with trying to be a bit more disciplined about my eating, and I could already feel a difference. But even that nice bit of news felt petty. It was Penny's funeral. Who cared how I fit into my dress? I helped Dan straighten his tie, and we left the building, bolting into a cab to avoid getting soaked, then running into the Brick, the Presbyterian church Dan's family had been going to for centuries, a soaring structure of white pillars and red brick. Inside, we shook the water from our umbrellas and found seats in a pew near the front. Louise and Catherine were already there, 27 years and one facelift apart in appearance. Both icy blondes and too thin to be healthy, their limbs were permanently tanned from too much tennis. Dan hugged them both dutifully while they gave me a half bow, as if they were German. I'd mostly stopped being offended by their standoffishness. I was grateful that they'd decided to stay at the Thompson instead of with us, as I feared they might. The organ played and the service followed its usual progression, the call to worship, the prayer of invocation. We weren't regular churchgoers, but I appreciated the comfort of the ritual. I recited the Lord's Prayer, and it gave me peace. Dan read a hymn, and an old family friend spoke well of Penny, a great lady. I cried twice and tried not to notice Louise's dry eyes, Catherine's head unbowed. I didn't need to be underlining all the reasons I didn't like them. Instead, I leaned my head against Dan's shoulder and reached for the tissues he'd been thoughtful enough to bring. I looked down at the program in my hands. It had a portrait of Penny taken at her 80th birthday on its cover. We had a copy sitting on our mantle at home. She gave it to us in a silver frame when we moved in. "I can watch over you," Penny had said with a husky laugh, laced with the cigarettes she still snuck sometimes. "You don't have to leave," I'd said, hugging her from the side. "No, my dear, it is time." Penny had waved her small hands around, her heirloom diamond flashing on her left hand. "Out with the old and all that, you know. We could share the apartment. We can stay in the spare room." "I wouldn't hear of it." I pulled her closer. She smelled of shalimar and the lavender she kept in her room to help her sleep.
She'd been so nice to me from the first lunch Dan brought me to at her club, insisting I have a glass of wine with the meal and hang the bosses. Thank you so much for letting us live here. She smiled at me, her wrinkles real and earned.
Dan's the best of the lot.
I know. Don't forget it. I promised her I wouldn't, and she left, her driver coming to collect her bags. We had her over once a month for dinners on Sundays and shared holiday meals. She was our family. I was going to miss her like crazy. The minister started the benediction, and I mouthed along. May the Lord bless you and keep you, Penny. Thank you, Penny, I added, always needing an amendment to everything. The reception was at the Colony Club. There was a full bar, and the air was thick with gin and tonics and smoked salmon sandwiches. There was an informal reception line that we stood in for a while, Dan knowing everyone and me repeatedly having to explain who I was. An all-too-familiar feeling, being the outsider, the person who never fits in no matter how hard they try, the one whose name no one remembers. The first few times I'd brought it up to him, Dan told me I was exaggerating, so I'd stopped trying to explain. He didn't not want to get it, but he was one of those guys who fit in wherever he went, so he couldn't really understand. 2 hours on the dot after the reception began, everyone started to say their goodbyes, as if a bell had sounded before they'd been called into the theater. But they were the ones leaving before the play started. The entertainment was still to come. As the waiters cleaned up, the family was ushered into a side room with 6 elegant wing-back chairs set up in a circle.
Will Poirot be joining us?
Dan quipped as he settled himself in one of the chairs.
Daniel, Louise said without humor.
Sorry, Mom.
I took his hand as Ms. Coates, the family lawyer, sat down in the chair at the top of the circle. She had shoulder-length silver hair held back with a black headband and was wearing a well-cut suit. She looked remarkably like the wills and estates partner from my firm, one of that tough, older generation that had to be more masculine than the men to survive the profession. My phone buzzed in my purse at my feet. It had been doing that all morning, a work day, another inconvenient day to be away from the office. Instinct made me check it, since I'd been ignoring it for the last several hours. It was a text from Thomas.
We need to talk.
Fantastic. Was Thomas breaking up with me? At funeral.
Still?
It's a family funeral, and I will be gone all day. Can we discuss on Monday? There was a pause while he likely recovered from the shock of me not leaving a funeral to talk to him.
9. My office.
See you then. I put my phone away and caught a disapproving look from Louise. I shrugged and mouthed, work, then turned away.
Are we all set? Ms. Coates said, another reproach.
Ready for you, Pauline, Louise said.
Excellent. Sorry for the dramatic setting.
She waggled her hand at the room. There was a roaring fire behind her, despite it being the middle of July. The club kept the air at a frigid 65 degrees. Black rain plinked against the windows.
Penny had a sense of the dramatic sometimes, not that she's in charge of the weather.
We all smiled as we were supposed to.
Yes, well, she wanted me to summarize the will for you, and so here we are.
And? Louise prompted with her fake sweet voice.
Well, as you know, Penny's assets were in a trust set up by her late husband, Archibald, and the beneficiary of the trust, her having no children, is you, Louise, and then on your passing, it's split equally between Catherine and Daniel.
Dan gripped my hand more tightly. We knew about this part. It wasn't controversial, and it was out of Penny's hands. Dan's uncle controlling assets from the grave. The important part was the direction to the trust to sell to us.
Does it say anything about the apartment? Catherine asked, leaning forward in her seat.
It's in the trust as well. She left the contents to Daniel and Nicole.
Are there no further instructions? I said in a small voice.
No.
What does that mean? Catherine asked, but I knew.
Louise owns it, I said, and she can do with it what she wants.
Ms. Coates gave me an appraising look.
Well, the trust does, but yes, Louise is the beneficiary of that trust, so it's Louise's to determine what to do with it.
And there's nothing else?
Dan asked.
No direction to sell it to us? You're sure?
No.
Mom?
Dan said, turning toward her.
Did you know about this?
She looked down, her cheeks pink, and picked a piece of invisible lint from her pristine black suit.
Well, Daniel, I don't know about all of these legalities.
But you know that Penny wanted us to have it. You can sell it to us for the right price. We'll have it appraised, get a mortgage. That's what you're going to do, right, Mom? Or we can just keep renting.
Louise played with the hem of her skirt.
Well, I don't know. It does seem as if you've had the apartment for a while now, and Catherine's been offered a job in New York with this marvelous company, so we thought.
I didn't need her to complete the thought. She wasn't going to do it. Whatever Penny had told us, she hadn't done it. I never knew Penny to lie to us before, but I couldn't blame her for letting it slip her mind. She was dying. Real estate wasn't her priority.
But Penny told us, Dan said, that she'd set everything up so we could stay.
Ms. Coates rubbed her hands together.
Perhaps you were confused. She did have me arrange with the co-op board for you to be there legally when you moved in, since their rules are quite strict and only the owner is supposed to be living there.
You're moving to New York? I asked Catherine. She gazed down her straight nose at me.
I've been offered a VP position at Linnaeus, and they're doing some very interesting work on a new protein that might be able to boost the immune system, so I thought I would.
When?
Well,
my head started moving again, unbidden this time. She was already in Manhattan, biding her time at the Thompson until she could displace us.
How long do we have? I asked.
I thought 30 days would be reasonable.
Dan began to protest, but it all faded away to so much noise.
There's an expression I heard once when I was working with a lawyer from France on a file.
Les cordonniers sont toujours les plus mal chaussés,
which, roughly translated, means the shoemakers are always the worst shod.
Dan and I are lawyers. If we'd followed up properly with Penny and helped her to follow through, all of this could have been taken care of. But we were too shy to insist, too polite, despite our worries. And now, we were going to be without more than shoes.
Chapter 16. That's what we're here for. Then, July.
What's up, Thomas? I asked him on Monday morning at 9 a.m. on the dot in his cavernous corner office. I'd brought him his favorite coffee from the shop downstairs as a peace offering, and though he'd smelled it appreciatively, he greeted me with a stern look. I'd spent the weekend mourning our apartment and stressing about this meeting. I'd unburdened myself in the group thread, tentatively at first. Then the whole story had come pouring out. How we'd been planning to buy the place for years. How Dan's family knew that, but they were refusing to sell it to us or even let us stay. Everyone was sympathetic, and Heather started sending me real estate listings and offering to go with me if I wanted, because she loved being a real estate looky-loo. I'd told them about the meeting with Thomas, too, and this morning Heather had sent me a "You got this" text that had been followed by little bursts of support from the others that felt good to receive. Our daily text exchanges had already become something enmeshed in my day.
Where were you on Friday?
Thomas said. I pushed myself upright in his visitor's chair, making myself as tall as possible. I told you, I had a funeral to go to. Dan's aunt died. I left out the great-aunt part because his facial reaction at the word aunt was enough to indicate that he wasn't impressed with even that level of familial relationship. His whole family is in town for the funeral, and we were close. We live in her apartment, I added, my voice shaking, not ready yet to change that to the past tense. Thomas doesn't like emotions, but if used strategically against him, they can be effective. And the emotions weren't faked. Dan had pleaded with his sister and his mom to let us stay, but they were immovable. We'd had our turn, Catherine said, crossing her arms in a way that meant she wasn't going to budge. Dan and I talked it over, late into the night, parsing every conversation we'd had with Penny. It felt desperate and upsetting, and it wasn't going to change anything. We had 30 days to find somewhere new to live. The prospect was exhausting. It couldn't be avoided, I said to Thomas when he didn't say anything. I'm sorry. I hated myself, and Thomas too, for making me apologize. Thomas tipped his chair back. His corner office had a 180-degree view of Midtown at his disposal.
All right. But coming on the heels of your other absence, it was very badly timed.
I couldn't control when she died, I said, instantly regretting it.
I'm aware of that, Nicole.
I clamped my jaw shut and met Thomas's eyes. He looked slightly chastened as he took a sip of his ridiculously expensive coffee. I shouldn't have brought it. My peace offering only ended up making me feel subservient. What did you want to speak to me about? I asked, when you called me.
Ah, yes. Some of your business expenses have been flagged.
I'm sorry?
The managing partner asked me to speak to you. Charging vacations to your expense account is frowned upon.
I didn't do that, I said, feeling nauseous. What vacation?
Your little trip to Wyoming.
I was in Colorado. I had only put in the report on Thursday. How had it already been reviewed and flagged? Was our managing partner that bored?
Regardless, an alert occurred because you were at your limit, and I have to say, Nicole, I'm surprised at you.
But it wasn't a vacation. I went to a women's networking event. I got invited to join the organization shortly after the points committee made its decision, and you said I needed to think outside the box and find a way to jumpstart my career, that I needed to do something different to bring in business, and so I thought it was a good idea.
What women's networking thing?
It's called Panthera Leo. It's the technical name for lion.
That's odd.
Any more so than Kiwanis?
Well, I've never heard of it, this lion thing.
Athena Williams is a member, and Connie Chu. You know, the founder of Feliday? She's a client.
Ah, yes. She is impressive.
Yes, and one of the leaders is Karma Rosen, the owner of Good Karma.
And your membership in this organization, will it bring in business?
That's the idea.
Any leads yet?
I only just joined. The trip to Colorado was an intensive they have for new members. Can you please give me a bit of latitude to translate this into business? Thomas played with one of his cufflinks. I remembered when I first met him almost 15 years ago when I was still a law student. He'd taken me with him to court for the day, trying to woo me to sign with the firm. I was top of my class at Yale, and they weren't the only firm who was throwing things my way to recruit me. But Thomas was the only one who'd taken the time to convince me personally, outside of the usual interview and cocktail circuit. I'd appreciated it and accepted their offer. Since then, he'd been my mentor, but he'd also been a barrier.
How long do you need?
You know, bringing in clients is not like pushing a button, but I swear to you, I am doing my best.
And what about this?
Thomas said, holding up the printout of my expense report. Can you please tell him the expense is legitimate? I swear to God, Thomas, you can look back as far as you like. I've never put anything that shouldn't be on a report. Never.
This points thing has you rattled.
You'd be rattled too. But committing fraud on my expense report for $5,000, I'm not a moron.
Thomas put the paper down, thinking about his next words.
Can I be honest with you?
I nodded.
We'd hoped you'd be further along by now.
I tried not to sink into my chair. This was exactly what I had feared was going on. Even though it had been all rosy until this last year, I'd seen it happen time and again. Once the bloom came off the rose, you were a dried-out husk before you knew it.
I'd hoped so too, but I'm doing something about it, I promise.
That's a promise I suggest you keep.
I nodded again and stood, knowing I was dismissed, feeling both tired and angry. I'd kept every one of my promises to the firm. They were the ones who'd broken theirs to me. But I'd made a new covenant now, one that would hopefully, finally, put me in a space where Thomas and the Points Committee couldn't touch me. Athena had offered her place for our first meeting. She lived in one of those soaring buildings made from weathered limestone on Central Park West. The doorman was expecting me, and I was the first to arrive. Athena answered the door barefoot, but wearing one of her congresswoman suits, expensive gray fabric that fit her perfectly, a crisp shirt, a chunky necklace at her collarbone. She was on the phone and motioned for me to wait a moment while she finished up.
You think we can break through in that market? I don't want to waste money chasing after ghosts.
She nodded while the person responded, then put her hand next to her head in the shape of a gun and shot herself.
All right, we'll discuss more tomorrow. I'm out for the night.
She hung up the phone and put it face down on a credenza made of glass that lay along the hallway wall.
Sorry about that. You want the 10-cent tour?
Sure.
She showed me around. As we circled to the kitchen, she gave me a glass of white wine and then took me up the back steps to the roof. It was the best view of Central Park I'd seen since I'd been in New York.
This is amazing. Isn't it? Sometimes I can't believe I live here.
Not your usual public servant, Diggs.
She laughed. You should see my apartment in D.C. She got an alert on her phone and tapped at it.
The others are here, and through the wonders of technology, I can let them in from up here.
Great, I said.
Is this where the party's at?
Heather said a minute later, coming onto the roof with Samantha and Connie in tow. Everyone was dressed in their work clothes, a collection of suits and column dresses for everyone but Samantha, who was wearing a light poplin summer dress that made me want to push for casual summers.
100%, Athena said.
At Connie's prompting, we gave each other the greeting, then spent a few minutes admiring the view, pointing to landmarks like tourists.
Shall we sit?
Athena said, nodding to a set of lounge furniture. There was an outdoor kitchen near it, with a small buffet of food and a wine fridge. We followed her lead and helped ourselves to food and alcohol. When we had our drinks, Athena raised her glass.
To Karma and Michelle.
We lifted our glasses and repeated the words. We all took a drink, then picked up where our text thread had left off earlier that day.
I got that job, Samantha said, glowing with happiness. Her hair was pulled back in a tight bun at the base of her neck.
She'd told us earlier that her show had wrapped in the spring and hadn't been renewed, but she was up for a large part in a new series that could lift her career to the next level, if she got it.
What's the part? I asked.
It's the lead in the new Law & Order spinoff.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic, Heather said.
She bit into one of the hors d'oeuvres that Athena had served us.
Athena, if you made these, I'm going to have to kill you.
They come out of a box.
That makes me feel better.
I never would have gotten the part without Connie, Samantha said, raising her hands into a praying pose and bowing toward her. Thank you.
Connie tipped her glass toward Samantha.
I made a few phone calls, that's all.
What's the point of having connections if you don't use them? And you wouldn't have gotten the part if you weren't talented.
Samantha sipped at her wine.
Talent is 50% of the equation, probably less.
How about you, Heather? Athena asked. Anything to report?
Heather popped another hors d'oeuvre into her mouth and washed it down with some wine. A new file came into the office, a company ripe for a takeover. Do I have Connie to thank for that as well?
Connie shrugged.
As fate would have it.
Fate, my ass. It's plain old influence peddling, and I love it.
Athena smiled nervously. Not a term you should throw around a congresswoman.
Heather pushed her hair back. It was frizzing in the heat. Oh, you know what I mean. We're doing what the men have always done. So, thank you, Connie. I'll make a killing off this deal if it goes through.
Women killing it, I said.
Precisely. When I get my bonus, we're going to Masa and eating the most expensive sushi in the world.
Masa was a $650 minimum. I'd never eaten there, only listened to the stories from the higher-ups who played credit card roulette.
I'm going to hold you to that, I said.
And you, Nicole? Athena asked.
We're so sorry about your aunt, Samantha added, patting my arm. I put my glass down. It's not only that, it's the move. Dan's tried to convince his sister to let us stay there, but she's been a total bitch about it. So we have less than 30 days to find a new place, and work is crazy, though not as crazy as it should be, and I... My throat closed up, and I felt near to tears. I'm sorry, guys. I'm a mess.
What's going on at work? Athena asked.
I hadn't had the time to fill them in on that morning's meeting with Thomas. Management thinks I've been cheating on my expense reports, and Thomas finally filled me in that the points cutting was just the tip of the iceberg. They're reevaluating me. I reached for my glass and took a large gulp of wine.
What does that mean? Samantha asked.
They're watching me and waiting for me to fuck up. Anything I do that isn't perfect in their eyes is going to feed into this narrative that they made a mistake with me, that I'm not living up to my potential and never will. I'm worried I'm going to get kicked out of the partnership.
It was the first time I'd even voiced the thought, but it was true. I'd seen them do it to other former rising stars, other firsts in their class who didn't quite make it as fast as the partners wanted.
No, come on, Athena said. Haven't you been there your whole career?
Yes, but that doesn't matter.
I thought being a lawyer was a steady job, Samantha said.
Sure, any old lawyer, some corporate drone, but when you're a partner, it's different.
It's hard to explain. You have to constantly prove yourself. Your last file doesn't matter. If you don't measure up right this minute, it can all be over in an instant.
Now that, Samantha said, I can relate to.
She put her hand on my back.
Just breathe, okay? It'll be all right.
Why didn't you come to us? Athena said. That's what we're here for.
I just found out this morning. I've been trying to process.
Well, these are solvable problems, aren't they?
Connie said. She pulled out her phone.
Where do you want to live? I own several rental properties on the Upper West Side. You had a 3-bedroom, right?
I can't afford something that big.
Do not worry about that. We'll work something out that makes sense. How about I send you some listings and my agent will take you around to them on the weekend?
That soon?
It sounds like you don't have a moment to lose.
Thank you.
No need to thank me. It's what we do. And we can help you on the work front, too. A company whose board I sit on is looking to move a large, high-profile litigation file. They aren't happy with their current counsel. It's a 2-month trial that's scheduled for late October. That sound like something you can do?
Yes, definitely. I don't have any trials scheduled till spring.
It was one of the reasons I was in trouble with the partnership. That's where the real money was made, in actual litigation.
Consider it done.
Just like that?
Just like that.
I felt a flood of relief. Thank you.
We don't think, we do.
Regardless, I got up and hugged her. She was surprised, but appreciative, I thought.
What about you, Connie? Heather asked when I sat back down. Everything okay with you?
Connie stole a glance at Athena.
Life continues apace.
Is that another saying? I asked. Athena reached for the wine bottle.
It just means that life is life. Anyone need another drink?
Heather put her hand up, and Athena filled her glass, then her own.
I do have a mission for all of you, though. Can you tell me where I can find a man who won't tank my re-election campaign?
We laughed then, as she meant us to, and the suggestions came fast and thick from Samantha and Heather, both single and deeply steeped in the New York dating scene. My phone buzzed. It was Dan.
How's the branding ceremony going?
Dan enjoyed teasing me, but he'd admitted the other day he was glad I joined the group.
It hurt, but we might get an apartment out of it. For reals?
Half of it is true.
Tell me.
When I get home.
Which will be...
I glanced up, feeling the stares of the others on me, their words cutting out. Sorry, it's just Dan. I texted soon, then put my phone down.
Tell us about Dan, Samantha said. You haven't said that much about him, but I'm jealous.
I smiled.
I'm sure you have your pick of guys.
Actors? Ugh, they're the worst.
We'll have to meet him sometime, Athena said lightly.
Yes, he'd like that.
The moment shifted back to dating advice. Heather seemed intent on finding Athena a man. There was always notadatenight.com when she was feeling horny. Her words. I sipped my wine, listening to their chatter, their excited suggestions, laughing at their terrible dating stories, secretly happy that I didn't have to participate. I'd never liked dating, which always felt fraught and stressful. Laughing there with the other women, I didn't know what an understatement that would turn out to be.
Chapter 17. Imagine your life here.
Then, July.
We can't afford this,
Dan whispered to me as we toured our second apartment near the High Line that Saturday. This one was in Hudson Yards, newly renovated, with amazing floor-to-ceiling windows with views of the city I'd only dreamed of ever having access to. I never thought I'd like a modern apartment, especially after living at Penny's with all its pre-war charm, but I felt lighter the moment I walked in. The ceilings soared, and the furnishings were minimalist, with an extremely comfortable-looking gray chenille couch dominating the living room in front of an enormous gas fire. Sunlight flooded through the massive windows, and a threefold door opened onto a patio filled with resort-like furniture.
But if we could?
We can't.
The building has all the amenities, the real estate agent said. Her name was Sylvia, and she was around 45, rail-thin, with dyed purple hair. She was wearing an immaculate white suit that I would have been too nervous to even try on. A familiar pin sat on her lapel.
Gym, spa, pool, parking, anything you could wish for.
If I had $1 billion,
Dan sang.
Hush!
He shook his head at me, but stayed quiet throughout the rest of the tour of the three-bedroom luxury digs. With each minute I spent in it, I wanted it more. We'd each have an office. The kitchen was to die for, with a 6-burner stove and an extra oven. We could have parties in this place. Not that we'd ever done that, but now that I had friends, we could. I took out my phone and quickly took a picture of the 1,000-square-foot living room, kitchen, dining space. I sent it to the Panthera thread, my sharing immediately rewarded with a flurry of OMG, fantastic, and a roaring lion emoji from Heather. I wanted the apartment badly, but Dan was right. We couldn't afford it. Even if things were going well at work, the monthly rent and fees were out of our league. I resolved to see some of the places Dan had circled in the Sunday paper,
reasonable apartments with half the square footage we had now. Or we could move to the suburbs, he'd suggested. He had friends from law school who lived in cute towns in New Jersey where the public schools were great.
Did you have any questions? Sylvia asked.
She tapped her red lacquered nails on the pristine counter.
We need to think about it, I said.
She clucked her tongue.
Think quickly. These units don't last long.
Got it. She handed me the one sheet, and her eyes tracked to the pin on the strap of my crossbody purse. I'd put it there because it would have looked silly on the t-shirt I was wearing. I scanned the one sheet to the monthly rent and other costs for the gym, spa, and pool, and I felt sick to my stomach. It was more than double the highest number I'd let myself imagine. The dream was dead, like too many others I'd had. Taking the world by storm, for one. That's what I was supposed to be doing. Or changing it. Hadn't I wanted to change it when I'd applied to law school? And now I just wished I made enough money to be able to live in this palace. What was wrong with me? Sylvia took us downstairs and left with another admonishment to act fast, leaving us alone in the cavernous atrium. The roar of the water fountain made it hard to hear, so we stood close to one another.
It would be nice, huh?
Dan said.
Imagine your life here.
Is our life so bad?
No.
Dan pulled me in for a hug.
There's always New Jersey,
he said into my hair. All those couples with kids. He leaned back, searching my face.
Meaning?
Is that what this is about? You want kids now?
Not sure how you got from property to kids.
Come on, Dan. I know you. Dan looked at the floor.
Well, okay, yeah, it has occurred to me. I mean, if you aren't on the partner track anymore, then you'd have time for that, right? We'd have time.
Dan.
What?
I touched his face. Us not wanting kids wasn't about not having enough time. You know that.
I know.
So what's this about?
Penny's dying got me thinking.
About carrying on the family legacy? Normally, Dan would have laughed at that. He hated his family's reliance on the past for currency in the present more than I did, but not that day.
Is that so crazy?
Yes, I wanted to scream. It is crazy to suddenly decide you want kids at 39, especially when you're not the one who'd have to carry them.
It feels kind of crazy, Dan. I know things are a bit unsettled now, but remember during lockdown how many times we said that we were lucky not to have kids? All that Zoom schooling and laundry and everyone on top of each other? Is that what you want?
It wasn't like that for everyone. Some people were happy to spend that time together as a family.
Show me, I wanted to say. Show me the ones who were. But we were happy just us. Aren't you still?
I am.
Then why change things? Why risk it? Dan tucked his chin into his chest.
So the next 40 years is just us, getting older, working. That's it?
My throat tightened, and I thought I might start crying right there in the impersonal lobby of the building I'd wanted to live in so badly 10 minutes ago.
I'm not enough for you?
I never said that.
You are kind of saying that, though.
It's not what I meant.
Okay.
Dan ran a hand over his head, shuffling at his hair. It was one of his endearing moves. He'd had a full head of hair but was worried that he was losing it, so he'd check it in moments of stress.
Have you been speaking to your mother?
I asked.
A little.
Ah,
it's not what you think.
No?
Dan gave me a half-smile.
Well, maybe it's a bit what you think.
Dan, we can't live our life for her, or for some idea about the future. Hell, I might not even be able to get pregnant.
I pointed to my stomach. These eggs are old.
Would you be willing to find out?
This conversation was getting less casual by the minute. Honestly, I don't know.
Okay.
Is it, though?
I'm not sure.
Fuck!
Yeah.
This isn't really the place to have this conversation.
I know.
Can we park this for now? I asked. With everything at work, I need a few weeks to regroup. Let's get settled somewhere and then we can revisit, all right?
Sure.
I took his hand. I love you.
I love you too.
I breathed out a sigh of relief. Okay then, let's go look at some of the rentals you found.
It'll be great.
I know, I said, trying to smile when all I wanted to do was cry. Chapter 18, The Docket. Then, July. Dan and I spent the rest of the day looking at apartments that were perfectly fine, but not what I wanted, before collapsing into bed early with a takeout pizza and a bottle of red wine. I woke up on Sunday feeling jittery and hungover, not the best mood for packing. There was a stack of boxes in the corner of our bedroom that I'd had delivered earlier in the week. We'd accumulated a lot of things while we lived at Penny's, and I hadn't done a triage of the stuff I'd had in my previous place because I was in the middle of a trial when we'd moved in together. There were still boxes I'd never opened in 10 years. Even though we hadn't decided where we were going to move, the packing had to begin. I rose. Dan was out for his usual long run on Sundays with a bunch of guys from his old firm. I'd managed to run for 19 minutes straight on the treadmill the day before, and I decided to give myself the day off since my legs were stiff. I shuffled to my closet and pulled out the boxes that were hiding in the back. I opened the first one and dust flew out. It was full of stuff from law school, papers I'd written, photos, graduation mementos. I held a picture of myself on graduation day. I looked so young, my ex-boyfriend's arm yoked around my shoulders. We were laughing, and I couldn't remember who took the shot. But that day I do remember being purely happy. It was a feeling that had become fleeting over the years, as the mountain of work and stress weighed me down and flattened me out. My phone rang with an incoming FaceTime call. Michelle's face filled the screen when I answered it. "Where are you?" she asked. Her braid was twisted around her head like a Swedish milkmaid. She was somewhere at the ranch, the mountains framed in the picture window behind her. "In my closet." "Interesting choice of location for our call." I leaned back against the wall. "I had a late night and forgot about our talk. I've been packing." "Is now still a good time?" "Yes, definitely." I held my phone out from my face and tried not to focus on the mess that was my hair. "If you don't mind me looking this way." "I would never judge another woman's appearance." "I should work on that." "We certainly can." I stretched my legs out in front of me, trying not to groan at the pain. I really was going to have to learn to stretch after my runs. "Is that what these talks are? A sort of therapy?" Michelle laughed. "No, no, I'm not licensed for that. It's more like mentorship in order to help you achieve your goals." "Seems like most in the group are doing well." "I'm glad to hear it, but I want to know how you are doing."
"Not amazing."
"Why not?" I filled her in on the apartment saga and what was going on at work. I usually hated FaceTime, always distracted by my own appearance on the screen, but Michelle's soothing voice as she encouraged me to unburden myself made me feel calm.
"You're dealing with a lot. Work, shelter, family. These are our building blocks. When even one is on shaky ground, we can feel unsteady."
"It feels like my whole life is coming apart."
"I understand why you feel that way. Now, what are you going to do about it?"
"What can I do?"
Michelle shook her head gently. I've been where you are. When my marriage ended and it felt like my career was over, my ex, he'd put everything in his name and I barely had any money. All I had were lawyers who wanted more and more and more from me. You know what I did?
You think I should go to Africa?
That was just a change in location. What was more important was what I changed in here. She touched her chest. And here. She touched her forehead. Up until that moment, I'd been letting life control me. My mantra was, everything happens for a reason, which was, to be frank, a cop-out. I laughed.
Lots of people have made a lot of money off that mantra.
I might even be one of them. But when I put it aside, when I decided I wasn't going to just toss around in the wake of life, that's when I found my true power.
And you met karma?
As fate would have it.
She waited for me to repeat it, but I resisted.
What made you decide to work together? After we met, we realized we'd experienced so many of the same disappointments despite our success, and that we both wanted to find a way to try to correct the injustices that still remained for women. We talked about various ways to accomplish that before landing on the fact that it was going to take women in every corner of the corridors of power to change things once and for all. The lock turned in the front door, and Dan thumped it open.
Babe?
I turned away from the screen.
I'm in here, just on a call.
I turned back to Michelle.
So what do I do? How do I flip the script for me?
Ask for what you need. Don't just wait for it to show up. The closet door swung open. A very sweaty Dan was standing in the doorway looking at me like I was crazy.
Hey,
I said.
What are you doing in here?
I was in here when Michelle called.
I turned the screen toward Dan and angled it up.
Say hi to Michelle, Dan.
He waved to her, and then I turned the screen away.
I've gotta go.
Michelle nodded. Think about what I said.
I will.
I ended the call. I could feel Dan hovering over me. I held out my hand to him.
Help me up.
He did as I asked, and I kissed him, tasting the salt on his lips.
What's all this about?
Just getting some advice.
From Michelle's song?
I told you she was one of the founders. Why is it so weird that I'm talking to her?
It's not.
Forget it.
Dan. He pulled away.
I need to take a shower.
Packing after?
Sure.
He walked toward the bathroom. I thought briefly of joining him in the shower, trying to pull back some of the intimacy that we seemed to have lost since the potential kids conversation. But something held me back. I was the one whose life was imploding. Dan should be trying to make me feel better, not the other way around. I pushed that thought away. None of this was Dan's fault. If I asked for his help, he'd give what he could. I was the one who was going to have to figure out how to ask for what I needed. And fast. On Monday morning, I woke up with a purpose and to some interesting mail on my phone. The first was a newsletter called InfoSec that had been forwarded to me by Athena. As I perused it, I was initially worried that Athena had revealed herself to be an adherent to some kind of end-of-the-world QAnon conspiracy. It was full of threat assessments and weather reports that were 3 weeks away. But when I Googled the name, I understood what it was. Put together by a group of ex-CIA types, it cost $100,000 to subscribe. Its purpose was to give its readers a heads up on incoming events that would affect the market, the world, and the weather. I'd heard more than one story about people who'd fled New York in February 2020 because of it. They'd also been able to time the market and avoid the crash. I'd had my doubts about the veracity of those stories, but now, here was proof, in my inbox. Companies that were ripe for a short sale. Places to avoid traveling to.
assessments of the current risk levels for a dozen hate groups and terrorist organizations. Reading it left me feeling unsettled. One of the reasons I went to law school was because I had an innate sense of justice. Something about the newsletter felt unfair. But it was also revelatory, a partial explanation for all those times when it felt like the higher-ups in my firm were one step ahead of me. I pulled myself from bed and went downstairs to the gym. We'd packed up half of our stuff the day before, and my whole body hurt from lugging boxes around. We also had a huge pile of things to be donated, which made my heart hurt too, even though I wasn't generally sentimental. As usual, I was alone in the gym. I got on the treadmill and started my routine, fast walking for 5 minutes, when I got a text from Karma in the encrypted app. "I need a favor," it said. "A young woman will be contacting you about a job at your firm. Please see to it that she's hired." It was followed by a link to a LinkedIn page, which showed a nondescript woman who'd recently graduated from Harvard Law. "I'm not in charge of recruiting," I wrote back, "and it's not when we usually hire people." "Be that as it may, I'm certain you can make it work." "Why does she need my help? Harvard Law, I'm sure she'll have plenty of offers." "Are you refusing your first request for assistance?" I slowed my treadmill down, my heart already beating fast enough. It wasn't the first request I'd gotten from PL. That had been for donations to Athena's re-election campaign, asking us to give the maximum. Connie's rapid "done" had been followed by "done" from Samantha and Heather. I'd scrambled to donate and add my "done" to the chorus. A few days later, it had been Samantha's turn to ask for donations to a women's shelter that she supported. That was done, done, and done, too. "No," I wrote, "it's a big ask, one I'm not sure that I can accomplish." "I have confidence that you will get it done." I put my phone down and tried to concentrate on getting the treadmill back up to speed and restarting my run, but that proved futile. After 5 minutes, I gave up and took the elevator back upstairs, my mind cluttered with Karma's request and how I was going to accomplish it. And also, what would happen to me if I didn't? Things didn't improve when I got to the office. Before I could even settle into my chair, I received an email from Thomas noting that I wasn't at my desk when he'd stopped by earlier. He'd attached my dockets for the month, which were low. No shit. 5 days away and Penny dying and the distraction of my career falling apart, what did he expect? Why couldn't I have a minute to be human? I needed some time to collect myself, a moment of fallibility. But nope, not allowed, not possible, no quarter, none. I picked up the phone. "Hello? Hi, Connie, it's Nicole. Oh, hi. How are the apartments?" "They were wonderful, thank you, especially the one in Hudson Yards. That's my favorite, too. It would be a fantastic opportunity to live there, but the thing is, you don't think you can afford it?" "I know we can't." I tucked the phone under my chin and started to type a response to Thomas. "I'm on it. My hours will be up by month's end." "I'd like you to take it, though." I hit send on the email and vowed to spend the next week at the office as much as possible. I had enough files that I could churn some hours out of to keep Thomas off my back for a while. It wasn't something I generally condoned doing, but I needed some breathing room. "That's so nice of you, but—" "Nicole," Connie said, interrupting me, "I'm offering it to you. I'd rather have someone I know and trust in there right now. So if you like the one in the yards, then it's yours." "For free?" "We'd work out a reasonable rent. Whatever you're paying now, for instance." "I can't accept that." "You can, and you will," she said firmly. Thomas answered me.
"You should hit 300 this month to show management you're serious about turning the ship around."
I took in a deep breath. 300 hours. That meant spending literally all of my time at the office for the rest of the month. Litigation wasn't like corporate. I couldn't bill 12 hours a day on one file unless I was in trial.
Nicole?
Sorry. Are you sure?
Yes.
I have to talk to Dan.
I understand, but make it a yes, okay? Consider it something you should be doing for the pride.
Why?
Because it's important for us all to be happy and situated, to work well together.
I emailed Thomas back. It will get done. True. Speaking of, I feel bad asking for this since you're being so generous.
What is it?
That file you mentioned. Is that going to happen?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I've been tied up with other things. Are you free on Friday at 2?
I didn't even bother checking my calendar. I would make any time work.
Yes. Block 2 hours, then. I'll bring in Guy and he can fill you in on the file.
Guy?
Guy Mason.
I Googled him quickly.
The chairman of Sullivan? That's the one.
Oh, wow. I wasn't expecting. Connie made an annoyed growl in her throat.
Nicole, a bit of advice.
Please.
You think too small. You're a good lawyer, right?
Yes.
One of the best?
Yes.
So then you're exactly who Sullivan needs right now.
Clients like that usually want a senior partner on their file.
Only because we let them think that way. But trust me, Guy will be there with me on Friday. I'll forward you the basics. Consider it done.
Thank you.
No need to thank me. You'll do the same for me. Talk soon.
She hung up.
I leaned back in my chair and stretched my hands over my head. It wasn't even 9:30 in the morning yet, and Thomas's 300 hours email felt like a bomb in my inbox. But maybe now I had the tools to defuse it.
Now, October. I take the emergency stairs from Athena's apartment to the basement two at a time, adrenaline coursing through me. It hasn't been that long since I arrived, but it feels like it's been hours. How much time do I have to get this done? And what am I supposed to do with the gun once I find it, if I do? That's always been my problem. Asking questions, litigating things, the minutiae. Sometimes I get lost in it and miss the big picture. All I know right now is that I wish Athena didn't live on the 20th floor. And, oh, God, how am I going to get back up there? My legs are already shaking, my shins screaming from the impact. There's a grimy door in front of me marked basement. Through the door, the light is dim, and my eyes have trouble adjusting. When they do, I scan the walls methodically. There. The large black garbage bins are lined up along one wall beneath a series of chutes. I approach them cautiously, trying to keep quiet, to not make any noise. There's a clicking sound, and the garage door creaks open slowly. I press myself into a shadow, hoping I'm invisible. A couple enters with a large garbage bag, laughing and drunk. He shoves it into a bin as she tugs on his arm. I pull back further against the wall. I'm grateful for the alcohol fog as they list toward the door to the building and disappear inside. I let out the breath I was holding and get closer to the bins. A quick glance above me shows that there are cameras trained on them. I cannot worry about that now. I have to trust that the hoodie and the baggy clothing I'm wearing and the darkness will shadow me enough that if anyone ever looks at the footage, I won't be recognizable. On closer inspection, it appears that each floor delivers to a different bin. How am I supposed to know which one is the right one? I take my phone out, the message for me to get the gun still floating there. I turn on the flashlight and tuck my face further back inside my hoodie as I search the wall for some indication of which bin to look in. It's there, faded numbers that refer to the floors the garbage comes from. Athena's bin is the third one in. I pray the gun is on top, that other tenants didn't decide to throw out several weeks' worth of garbage on the same night. I haul myself up onto the edge of the bin and scan it with the flashlight, looking for something metal. It's not there. I want to stop and cry, but that's not an option. I have to find the gun. If I don't, I don't know what will happen, but I'm so far into this now I can't even think that far ahead. I should get off this smelly heap and call the police. So far, I haven't done much wrong. A bit of obstruction of justice. I probably won't go to jail for that. I could chalk it up to the shock. I could lose my law license, though. Fuck, fuck, fuck. I use the flashlight again. The bin is half full. The gun probably slipped down to the bottom. If I remove the bags of garbage and put them in the bin next to this one, I can probably find it. I lift the first bag, and it splits, spilling coffee grinds and half-eaten pasta all over me. I want to retch, but I toss it aside and keep moving. If I get out of this, I'm going to find a way to tip my local garbage guy. There is no way he's making enough money. One bag, two, three, the things people throw away. A bag full of mothballed clothes. What looks like a lifetime of love letters full of hearts and stars. The rotted contents of a fridge. Oh, someone died in this building. Not just Jack, but someone old, someone like Penny. It's their life that I'm trampling on in my mad attempt to find a gun someone used to end someone else's life. But I can't stop and think about that. I toss another bag aside and then another. One more and I hear a clink. I stop and crouch, moving my hands around until I find it. The gun. I hold it gingerly in my gloved hands. Is it loaded? I find the safety and put it on. The gun is heavy, and I have nowhere to put it. I stand there for a moment, my breath ragged, my heart pounding, my legs shaking. Now what?
I'll take that, thank you,
a man says, emerging from the dark, and all I want to do is scream.